This week in KMA Land, Shenandoah Recreation Center plans revealed. Shenandoah Medical Center announces Phase 3 expansion. Veterans Day ceremonies in Shenandoah and Emerson. Shenandoah School Board hears soccer programs pitch. Page County Annex sidewalk repairs hit snag. And Mills County supervisors explore VA relocation. I'm Mike Peterson. Big dreams and proposed projects highlighted the week in Shenandoah, including the announcement of plans for a premier recreation center project. Vision Shenandoah President Matt Sells outlined preliminary plans for the Shenandoah Fieldhouse project at Monday night's Shenandoah School Board meeting. Construction is targeted for 2029 of the project on property off of A Avenue near the Shenandoah Medical Center campus and the Veterans Administration's community-based outpatient clinic. Currently listed as 128,500 square feet, Sells says the size is closer to 140,000 square feet. Proposed amenities include a 17,000 square foot fitness and performance area for weight training and cardio work, an 8,000 square foot event center to host 300 person events, a 15,000 square foot aquatic center for competition and aquatherapy, among other things, an 80,000 square foot competition track, turf, and tennis pickleball space in an air supported dome, and a 15,000 square foot gym with two full size basketball and volleyball courts. Sells says a partnership between the school district, the city of Shenandoah, and Shenandoah Medical Center would cover approximately $26 million of the $40 million project. He says remaining funds would come from private investment, including possible funding from the Charles E. Lakin Foundation.
We obviously have a presentation to make to the Lakin Foundation, and we've seen them be great partners with a number of local institutions in order to help get projects done. And, you know, as I've been starting to kind of pitch this to our typical donors that we've worked with on a number of projects, such as our cancer center and previous building projects, there's just been a lot of interest in getting something like this done.
Sells says not having a large recreation center is considered an anomaly for a community like Shenandoah. He says a field house would help draw younger adults and families to the city.
I think it's a very strong draw, and I think it's something that young families are looking at. I think there's a number of things that, of obviously ways and parts of this facility that could help our school district, but help everyone, right? I see this as something that would separate Shenandoah as having the premier facility in Southwest Iowa.
Sells, who is also SMC CEO, says the facility would lure tournaments to Shenandoah.
We are not trying to take the approach in any of those ways to be good enough. Right? Like, we want to continue to be the best, and I think it's very important that we continue to inspire our young people that we can, and we can be there, we can help them be their best, and it's through things like dreaming big and doing things that you never thought would be possible. And if you work together, you can make those things happen.
Sells provided more details at a Shenandoah Chamber and Industry Association coffee Wednesday morning and defined some of the community's needs for the proposed project would cover. From the hospital standpoint, Sells says Shenandoah is facing a shortfall in recruiting new employees and residents.
You know, one thing from our standpoint is an employer. We have about 370 employees. Well over 50%, nearly 60 by last count, are driving in from outside of Shenandoah. But that's pretty much 200 people that we employ here that don't live in this community.
Well, saying he's not speaking for either the city or the Shenandoah School District, Sells says the city's current outdoor pool has an estimated 5 to 10 years of remaining useful life.
Having a pool in an aquatic center from an indoor perspective, I know the number of people that we have in this facility that have kids and folks, and they're driving to Clarinda and Red Oak for swimming, right? So especially during the winter months.
Sells says a large gym with two full-size basketball and volleyball courts would cover the need for competition space.
Our Shenandoah Community School possesses one regulation-size high school basketball court. A high school basketball court, if you build one now, it's 84 feet long. That is the standard, right? And so we have one at the high school, and the court in the middle school is 74 feet long, obviously with pretty narrow baselines.
Also included is a competition track, turf, and tennis pickleball space in an air-supported dome. Currently, Sells says the closest indoor competition track is in Maryville. Well, plans for another major project in Shenandoah were announced at that same Skia Coffee. Phase 3 of Shenandoah Medical Center's hospital's expansion and renovation project. Matt Sells again outlined the estimated $18 million project, which includes 86 additional parking stalls plus new accommodations for the Shenandoah Ambulance Service.
That will be a three-bay ambulance service. It will also have a training center. That's where we'll do all of our BLS classes and our basic life support and all of our advanced classes as well moving forward, which will be really nice. And that's where our living quarters and everything will be contained for our EMS team. So that'll be a nice addition.
Another component is an expanded MRI and specialty clinic session.
You know, right now we have a mobile unit that's here 3 days a week. And of course, it's served us very, very well over the years. And it's actually a very, very new machine. So we've been very happy with our partnership there. However, you know, to have 24/7 availability of MRI in our facility will be key. It will definitely help us advance our stroke care that we're able to provide in the emergency department and definitely kind of add a lot of value to what we're able to do.
Sells's three additional providers, offices, and 9 new exam rooms are also included.
When we put on this 43,000 square foot addition, we added 24 provider offices and 72 exam rooms. And I thought when we build it, wow, we're overbuilding and we'll never fill it. And today we have providers doubling up in offices and sharing exam rooms because we're full.
Sells says Phase 3 would also cover the need for expanded obstetric care in the facility.
We've had situations where we've had 5 or 6 babies in-house at one time. And we currently only have 2 labor and delivery rooms, which means we have our moms and couplets in smaller rooms. And so, you know, we obviously want to enhance that experience. We want to make sure that we're able to leave those moms throughout their labor and postpartum in their room that they were originally assigned.
Other plans call for 4 expanded patient rooms, including 1 for bariatric care, an updated respiratory care unit, and expanded food services, among others. Groundbreaking is targeted for March 2027. Sells says SMC plans to seek grants and loans to cover the expansion's cost. Phase 3 follows on the heels of other recent renovations, including the 43,000 square foot expansion completed in 2016 and the Robert S. Holmes Family Cancer Center opened in early 2024. Shenandoah was among the communities honoring servicemen and women this week. Shenandoah Middle School's 7th and 8th grade band performing the Star Spangled Banner at the outset of traditional Veterans Day services at the high school gym. Middle school and high school students joined the public, including area veterans, in saluting the nation's servicemen and women. Tuesday's ceremonies marked a homecoming of sorts for a 1985 Shenandoah High School graduate who's also a veteran. First Lieutenant retired Doug Tillman enlisted in the Iowa National Guard in Shenandoah in 1984. After completing his basic and advanced infantry training at Fort Benning, Georgia, Tillman later attended the Iowa Military Academy's Officers Candidate School, where he was commissioned as a second lieutenant in 1988. He also held a range of leadership positions, including scout platoon leader, executive officer, and company commander within the Guard's 1st Battalion, 168th Infantry. Currently semi-retired and living in Omaha, Tillman says veterans are interwoven into the fabric of the country.
We've heard it say thank you to a veteran. More importantly, realize that your routine, your daily activity, everything that you do, the pursuits that you have, the things that we take for granted, were fought for so that you can do that. People lost lives because of that, to give us that right and that freedom and those liberties.
Tillman says students and residents can honor veterans through service in some capacity.
I'm not saying to do it in the military, even though I would encourage it. I'm not even saying to do it full time. A reserve police officer, a volunteer firefighter, a missionary for your church, something with youth sports, be a coach, be an official, serve. Get outside of yourself and serve. And you'll continue on the work that our veterans are doing for us and our military personnel are doing for us every day.
Tillman also stressed another takeaway from his military service, surrounding yourself around good people.
Don't waste a moment of your life on the people that will hold you back, will tear you down. will make you feel and take you away from the beliefs and the pursuits of freedom, liberty. Don't allow those people to waste a minute of your life, because it does go fast.
Shenandoah High School's choir and the Shenandoah American Legion Color Guard also participated in Tuesday's ceremonies. Another salute to veterans took place in Emerson last weekend. While cold weather forced the ceremonies inside the Emerson Community Building, citizens and veterans joined together on a rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner at the beginning of the Salute to Services of the Mills County Freedom Rock early Sunday afternoon. Emerson Mayor Larry Johnson says the event served as another chance to recognize the area's veterans and also the Mills County Freedom Rock located in Evans Park. Retired Army Major General Christopher Hughes served as guest speaker for the ceremonies. A Red Oak High School graduate and 35-year Army veteran, Hughes fought in the invasion of Haiti, as well as conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, and was stationed in various countries around the globe. Hughes, who moved back to Red Oak 7 years ago after his retirement, says Southwest Iowa has a rich tradition of military service.
You sit back and you look at not just the Freedom Rock here, but the one in Red Oak and the other places, and you start adding up the number of men and women who has served. Our current senator, Joni Ernst, has served. You look at Denny Sapp, who was a Blue Angel. You've got Kevin Lorette, who was a Navy captain. You've got some of my high school teachers and middle school teachers like Russ Bender, who were Marine Corps sergeants. We didn't get away with anything in that man's class. And you wonder why we are the way we are. And you wonder why people like me, who have been around the world, come back.
During his time in the military, Hughes says the experiences he and other service members have gone through showcase the opportunities and freedoms that Americans have thanks to those who have served.
I have seen what life really looks like outside of this beautiful little place that we call Southwest Iowa. I've seen how fragile freedom is. I've seen how tenuous it can be if good men and women don't stand up and do the right thing. And if freedom is absent, then so are we in the way we live. When you have seen so much of the world, you begin to understand what truly matters in life.
Hughes adds one of the greatest lessons the military taught him and other members is to find and focus on their strengths. He says that Veterans Day and ceremonies like the one Sunday are about recognizing anybody who has put on the uniform and served their country.
The men and women, many of whom are in this room with me here today, have done their duty, whether they were in combat, where they weren't, whether they were in a short period of time or 35 years plus, doesn't matter. What matters is they raised the right hand, they swore an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Less than 1% of our population does that today, now that we're an all-volunteer force.
Ceremonies reached a somber conclusion Sunday with a 21-gun salute and the playing of taps after a moment of silence and a wreath laying. Renewed efforts to establish a Shenandoah High School soccer program were discussed this week. Shenandoah Park and Recreation Director Kevin Olson updated the Shenandoah School Board Monday on the activities of the city's soccer programs. Currently, Olson says participation in the sport has grown over the past few years, with traveling teams in three age levels competing against other KMA land communities.
Years ago, soccer just kind of went till sixth grade. It was just a rec activity. You know, everybody wore their town t-shirts. Everybody just played against each other. So we've grown in the last 4 years to offer soccer up to 15 years of age. So we have a competitive U15, U12, and U10 team that travels around Southwest Iowa and competes in the Southwest Iowa Soccer League.
Olson says at least 30 high school age students are competing in the league, with some receiving exemptions past 15 years old. But he says the numbers drop off once they get older because there's no high school soccer program.
We currently have freshmen that would play in our league right now. The league is very big on trying to see community growth and everything else, so they've offered us exemptions to our kids that have aged out, and rather than having not play at all this year, they're still allowed to kind of play on our team, but that's going to kind of change.
If a program is established, Olson says the high school's teams would play in the spring. With the accelerated timeline for joining the Western Iowa Conference, Olson says Shenandoah would be the only member without high school soccer. while saying the district would like to move in the direction of a program, Shenandoah School Superintendent Dr. Kerry Nelson says the timing is questionable. Nelson says the district is concerned about having solid schedules for tennis, bowling, and other sports. She says it'll be January or February before a state committee rules on Shenandoah's switch from the Hawkeye 10 to the WIC. Improvements to sidewalks around the Page County Annex Building and Courthouse must wait until next spring. More discussion regarding sidewalk improvements outside the two county buildings took place at Wednesday's Page County Board of Supervisors meeting. The board also discussed a new proposed parking lot on the west side of the Annex Building, located near the intersection of West Washington and North 18th Streets. Well, the board accepted a portion of the proposal from Barnes & Son Concrete earlier this year to replace the sidewalks around the annex. Supervisor Judy Clark told KMA News the offer was withdrawn after Wednesday's meeting because the board didn't include the company's proposal for the parking lot. Page County Auditor Kristen Wagner says the county received a complaint recently about the condition and lack of sidewalk along portions of West Washington Street near the annex building.
He was in a wheelchair. He was going up the sidewalk, and then, of course, there was, you know, a break in the sidewalk, so then he had to go back and then get onto the street because we had no sidewalk for him to go on.
Clark says the county needs to move forward in the sidewalk repairs, but acknowledged that with winter fast approaching, it isn't the best time to pour new concrete. Supervisor Brian Rogers notes the county will also want to separate out the sidewalk work along public streets to ensure they utilize the city's cost share program.
We split it with the city. So that's got to be totally separate.
Yeah. So we want that.
And then we'll put something together later for the rest of it. So if you want to do it, I would say if my recommendation is just a sidewalk on the outside of the city as one unit, that way we can turn that in with the city and get cost share on that.
The board instructed County Engineer J.D. King and his staff to prepare a bid specification sheet for the proposals by the end of the year, with the goal of having a contractor lined up for the following spring. Mills County officials are backing plans to relocate the county's Veterans Affairs Department. At its regular meeting Wednesday morning, the Mills County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved relocating the Veterans Affairs Office from its current location at 602 South Locust Street to the county's annex building located at 403 Railroad Avenue. The move follows months of discussion of whether to move Veterans Affairs, which is currently the only department located in the Locust Street building, and joins a few other departments of the annex, including public health. In addition to consolidating maintenance and upkeep costs, Supervisor Richard Crouch says the annex is also more accessible.
Number one, it is zero entry on everything there. From out of your car, you have nothing to step up on, step over, step into. Upkeep would be another reason. We spent probably in the neighborhood of anywhere from $13,000 to $15,000 last year in putting in new concrete things at the present place.
While agreeing on the efficiencies in terms of maintenance and accessibility, Supervisor Jack Sayers urged that at least one of the supervisors meet with Veterans Affairs Director Elizabeth Richardson and Public Health Director Caitlin Mertfeld to get a more solidified plan on how they can share office space.
Maybe not differing opinions, but differing expectations about the room space. So I think it'd be good for at least one of us to meet with Elizabeth and Caitlin if this does pass, to talk about which offices Veterans Affairs will get.
The board plans to discuss the exact timeline for the move and office arrangement at the annex at a future meeting. Sydney officials are exploring bringing new housing and businesses to the community. At its regular meeting Monday evening, the Sydney City Council discussed funding opportunities on the horizon for such projects, including the Charles E. Lakin Foundation's Revitalize Southwest Iowa initiative. Sydney is one of 51 communities in the region earmarked for a portion of the foundation's $165 million donation. Sydney Mayor Justin Shirley serves on the board for Vision Sydney, the nonprofit expected to help propose and funnel funding into local projects. Though the group encountered a snag in acquiring its nonprofit status, likely delaying the time frame for beginning to receive funding for a year, Shirley says housing is one of the main topics identified by the Lakin Foundation for its revitalization initiative. He says Vision Sydney looks to prioritize infill housing on vacant lots.
The group would be interested in purchasing the lots from the city or the private owner and building homes on those lots, selling them, and then working towards
a development. But the city then is going to have skin in the game to build the infrastructure to do the development. We're talking roads, water, sewer, storm sewer, the whole nine yards.
In terms of promoting local businesses, Shirley says he also proposes bringing together various groups in town to form a chamber and industry association or similar entity.
I'd love to take people from this board, from Hometown Pride, from school board, from the rodeo board, and everyone works together because we all succeed or we all fail together, and come up with some, you know, I don't know if it's the chamber and industry or the some sort of entity that promotes all of Sydney and its interests, because we're all in it together.
Shirley also encouraged each council member to reach out to other communities in the area moving forward with similar developments and to contact the developers directly about potential funding opportunities. The Southwest Iowa Theater Group is transporting audiences back to a magical era the next two weekends. World War II. America was at war on numerous fronts. Thousands of men and women torn from their families, sent to foreign countries to defend democracy, facing the greatest of dangers. In order to keep troops' spirit amidst the turmoil, the USO provided much-needed entertainment. The Southwest Iowa Theater Group recaptures that era with its latest production.
Popping up soda pop rinkies to our heart's delight. Kids to swing her quickies, jukebox Saturday night.
Jukebox Saturday Night, just one of the classic 1940s songs featured in G.I. Jukebox, which opened last night at the Park Playhouse's Stan Orton stage. For this weekend and next, the stage is transformed into a Hollywood canteen, featuring an all-star cast of veteran performers and a nostalgic musical review. It's the second time around for this production on the Swidick stage. Director Belinda DeBolt was among the performers in the first G.I. Jukebox in the winter of 2003. DeBolt tells KMA News now is the time to crank up the jukeboxing in.
I just think it's a good time to have this type of program. Again, we were united against fascism and for democracy, so that was a really good time for us to get together. We did have some growing pains between the 1940s and now, but I think that same idea of sticking together and working together is really important today.
In fact, Belinda's daughter, Blair DeBolt, appears in the new version as Dorothy Hayes. Blair says following in her mother's footsteps is just one reason for doing the show.
It's so fun because it's more historical than a lot of the things I've done, and this is one of the eras in history that I really studied getting my master's. So going back in time and going to read all of those older books, I've been doing a lot of studying and just reading books about 1940s female spies. And it's just interesting how many were in the USO that were also spies for the United States.
Sarah Shurkolk, who portrays Susan Baker, says the music is a departure from today's modern sound.
It's a lot of like big band music. There's even though our accompaniment's all with piano, there's a lot of music that you can really dance to. And that's a lot different than the music today that's a lot of computerized and digital music. So I think that it's fun to be able to go back and go back to the simplicity of that era.
Tommy Hanna plays George Sparks. Along with the history, Hanna hopes the music injects a spirit of patriotism in audience members.
This is probably one of the biggest things of American culture that we have that we really don't want to let go. My grandfather, he fought in World War II, and like so many others, I mean, our country, we can do what we do today because of men like him.
Performances at G.I. Jukebox take place again tonight at 7:30, Sunday afternoon at 2. Three more performances take place next Friday, Saturday evenings at 7:30, and Sunday afternoon at 2. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com. You can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.